once again, Professor Lopez. Professor, welcome back.
Thanks.
Let's see. I read a recent Science article that indicated that contrary to what was believed earlier, I guess our sun is considered to be a fairly stable sun as suns go. And there was some recent evidence that even stable suns seem to occasionally go berserk for reasons unknown, and not necessarily supernova, but do something so disagreeable that it could virtually sterilize planets like ours, in their immediate vicinity.
There might be stars that do things like that, but I don't think that those are sun-like stars. People have been observing sun-like stars for the past 30, 40 years, and they do sometimes do strange things. And we know, for example, that other stars have magnetic activity cycles, like our sun.
Right.
And sometimes they turn on and sometimes they turn off.
Mm-hmm.
And our sun also exhibits that kind of behavior. So the sun could do things that could affect our technology, but remember, the sun's been around for billions of years, and there's no evidence anywhere in the geological record that it has ever done anything that would have, you know, that kind of an impact on...
And I'm sure it'll be around for billions of years yet to come, and our very own Earth has been around a very long time. Contrary, though, we haven't been around that long.
That's true, but we can look back to the geologic records, and we don't see any evidence of that kind of dramatic change. But nonetheless, the sun can have changes as... And these massive sunspots during a time when it's supposed to be solar minimum is an example of that.
Yeah.
And actually, it is kind of interesting because you got to wonder what exactly is going on with the sun, because
yes,
the solar cycle does seem to have been intensifying over the past 100 years. There's evidence that the solar wind magnetic field has been getting stronger, in fact, doubling over the past 100 years, and maybe this kind of activity at what we normally call solar minimum is just part of this a little bit more magnetically active sun.
Hmm.
And that has direct implications for our technology, because we depend on electricity and magnetism for everything.
And there are many people who believe that comets are to some degree responsible, and there are stories going around that comets are causing this a disturbance on the sun. Comets actually hitting the sun.
No. Wouldn't do anything.
Comets
do hit the sun. And in fact, if your viewers go to the SOHO website to see images of the sun, they can get pictures. You know, they've got some movies of comets going and crashing, maybe not actually hitting the sun, but coming close enough that they vaporize. So they go around the sun. They don't come back the other side.
Okay, but they wouldn't be the causative agent of these monstrous sunspots and then
these
explosions.
This is something deep inside the sun. This is something that sun's dynamics and nothing in the solar system is going to affect that.
Do we think it does point
out the need for prediction.
Yes.
And knowing something about what space weather is doing and being able to warn satellite operators and power grid operators. I think that's why we didn't see more bad effects in this last round of activity, because
they
people
got
knew
warned.
It was coming.
They got warned, yeah.
But you know what's very interesting is right at the time when all of this activity was going on, there was a hearing in the House of Representatives to review funding for the Space Environment Center, the place in Boulder, Colorado, that does space weather prediction. Because in the budget, they're zeroed out.
They're wiped out
of the budget.
Yeah, we should observe. Here's one for you. We can't look at the other side of the sun, for the most part, right?
Right.
Should we be able to? In other words, prediction would certainly improve incredibly. The way I understand it, we've got a satellite out about 1,000,000 miles from Earth, between Earth and the sun, so that we can look at what's actively going on, at what's pointed toward Earth. What do you think of the concept of getting a satellite about as far away from the sun, over on the other side, that could relay information about... Then just think, Professor, what that would do for forecasting.
It's a great idea. And in fact, what we really need is like several of them stationed in Earth orbit around the sun, so that we can develop stereo pictures of the sun. And there is actually an idea for a mission called STEREO that's supposed to fly sometime in the next decade or so, that we'll put one satellite ahead of the Earth and one satellite behind the Earth in the Earth orbit so that we can get a stereo view, at least on this side of the sun. Putting them on the other side of the sun, that presents more of a challenge and be a lot more expensive. But, absolutely. If we could do that, then we could have great prediction.
Now, there's also a great controversy, Professor, about whether the sun and its activity affect weather on Earth. Now, I guess the jury is still out on this one, or what are your thoughts?
Well, you have to distinguish between weather and climate. I mean, weather is short-term stuff, like is it going to rain today or not? Climate is long-term. I live in El Paso. It's a very dry climate. Mm-hmm. We're never going to get a lot of rain. There might be days that we have rain, but in general, we get a small amount of rain a year. And climate, there is evidence that that solar activity does affect climate.
Uh-huh.
Weather, uh-huh. No, it's not. Now, a magnetic storm does not mean that we're going to have a hurricane.
I'm sorry, I meant climate, so I should have really said that.
But you're thinking yes, huh? There's evidence, and there's also physical mechanisms. How would this work that's plausible, that fits within physical laws? So, yeah, there's a mechanism, and there's some evidence that yes, when the sun has greater magnetic activity, the Earth warms up. So... Huh. Global warming is a fact. It's been observed. Earth is getting warmer. The real question is how much was caused by humans versus how much was being caused by the sun.
Indeed. And do you have any thoughts?
I don't know. I am pretty convinced that some of the global warming that we have seen over the past 100 years is solar in origin.
I mean, even the common person sort of puts that together easily. More activity from the sun, more radiation, more effect on Earth. The sun does affect us after all, and if it's got a lot more energy, then it's transferring it one way or the other to Earth, and it gets warmer here. Duh.
It's actually a pretty complicated chain of events. It's through the cosmic rays.
I bet it is.
That people think that this works in high-altitude clouds, so that when you've got a lot of solar wind magnetic field, you don't have a lot of cosmic rays, so you don't have a lot of high-altitude clouds, so more sunlight hits the Earth instead of being reflected. That's the chain of events that people have talked about. And it's something that's physically plausible that could be responsible for some of the global warming. There's just so much that we don't understand.
Yes, there is, and there needs to be money made available. I mean, after all, we can ship $87 billion or whatever it is over to Iraq to rebuild that country and so forth and so on. So why aren't we spending money, you know, to look at our own very important environment? You said it yourself. I mean, we're filled with chips from end to end. They mean everything now in this country. And if we were to get hit really hard without warning, oh, that would be expensive, Professor, very expensive.
It could be really bad. And so, actually, the sun did us a favor with these storms, you know, a couple of weeks ago, because those storms hit just at the time that Congress was talking about, should we zero out the Space Environment Center?
You almost might call it a shot across the bow, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. So it was perfectly timed, and I'm glad to say that the session went very well in the House. It was chaired by Vern Ehlers, who's a physicist, by the way, one of two physicists in the Congress. And I'm very hopeful that in conference, the Senate and the House will come together and say, we cannot afford not to have space weather predictions.
Very good.
And your listeners, if you guys want to call your congressman or senator and tell them that we need to have space weather prediction and we need the Space Environment Center, do it.
I mean, for example, right now, sunspot number 486, let's assume the worst and that it's growing and growing and growing. And if we had a satellite on the other side of the sun, we'd be able to say, hey, everybody, tinfoil hat time or whatever, because here she comes.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see in a week when it comes around the limb of the sun, if it's still there and if it's still as monstrous as it was before.
Indeed so.
If it is growing, who knows? Maybe we'll have another, you know, super flare like the 1859.
Well, right. Exactly. Now, Professor, another interesting thing happened. I watch on a daily basis, and holy mackerel, when those gigantic spots finally rotated away on the other side of the sun, the charts dropped like a rock. I mean, I never saw it. It was like, you know, the patient just died, and it was way down just flat in the B area. Just amazing. actually, how quiet it suddenly got, and now it's like the giant quiet before the storm.
Exactly.
You see
well,
it the same
there's
way.
There's storming going on, but as you say, it's on the other side of the sun, and we know that stuff is blowing off in the other direction.
Yes.
We just have to wait to see what happens in a couple of weeks.
Is it unusual, Professor, when you take the sun as a whole, that these monstrous spots would congregate kind of in one area and then be so quiescent on the other side? Isn't that strange?
I'm actually not sure how strange that is, because you get all kinds of behavior from the sun, and there are plenty of times I've seen that the side that's facing us doesn't have any sunspots, but there seems to be magnetic activity on the other side. But the difference is so huge. If they're as big as they were when they was facing us, that does seem a little bit odd to me.
Yeah.
But not my field exactly, so I can't say how many other times people have seen that kind of behavior.
Professor, what's at the core of the sun?
The core?
The core.
A very large fusion reaction where hydrogen, basically protons for the most part, are being smashed together because the temperatures are so high and they're moving so quick, they can overcome the electrical repulsion. And they can get close enough where the nuclear force can take over and then fuse them into helium nuclei. And when that happens, the product weighs less than what went into the reaction. And the extra mass, the missing mass, appears as energy. And that's what powers the sun. That's what powers an H-bomb. Same process.
And the sun, I've heard, is much hotter on the outside than it is down near the core. Is that true or false?
That is false. The core is hotter than the atmosphere of the sun. But the atmosphere is a couple of million degrees. The visible surface is only 6,000 degrees in Celsius, Kelvin, actually, degrees Kelvin, so 12,000 degrees Fahrenheit, roughly. So the atmosphere is much hotter than the surface, but the core is still hotter than the atmosphere.
Anybody have any idea by how much?
Actually, I don't remember the number for exactly the temperature of the core. We've got a surprisingly good idea of the overall basic structure of the sun. The sun is always quivering, like a big bowl of Jello, and we can make observations of that shaking and use it to probe the inside of the sun in the same way that we use earthquakes to probe the inside of the earth because of the sound waves traveling through the earth.
Right.
And so there's a field called helioseismology, the seismology of the sun, and they've got pretty good evidence of the basic structure of the sun.
That's really fascinating. What's the difference between a flare and this coronal mass ejection? Are they one and the same? How do we differentiate between the two?
They're not exactly the same. They usually come together, but they don't always have to. A coronal mass ejection is a huge cloud of electrically conducting gas and magnetic field that lifts off from the sun and hurtles out into space. And when these things hit us, then sometimes we get magnetic storms. The flare is a sudden release of energy stored in the solar magnetic field near the surface of the sun. And it's like a big explosion. And sometimes the big explosion is associated with one of these big clouds that blows out into space. In fact, quite often they're associated, but they don't have to be. But these big flares that we saw all had big coronal mass ejections associated with them.
Yes. Have they settled, by the way, on the size of this most recent incredible explosion? Was it... I've heard various figures that range from, I think, about X28 is the last one I saw, which seems, and maybe you can tell me a little bit about the scale.
Right.
X20, I believe, was the top of the scale, wasn't it?
It used to be.
used to be is right, because I guess we need more instruments, different instruments.
Well, the thing is that the flare... on November 4th, did actually saturate the detectors, and they had to try to figure it out from other means, just really how big it was. And you're correct, it was. They've settled on X28. The way that they classify flares is by how much power there is, how many watts per square meter in a certain range of X-ray wavelengths from 1 to 8 angstroms.
Yes.
That window, just how much power in that little window is there. And
Professor, quick question. Is the scale linear or
no,
is...
No, it's logarithmic.
It's logarithmic.
So,
uh-huh.
So. Yeah, so an X-28 is... 2.8 times more powerful than an X10, right? So it's not. Well, yeah, it's. No, I said that wrong. I gave you a linear scale. No, it is logarithmic. So yes.
Okay,
an X28 is a lot bigger than an X10.
Okay. Why did they presume that that an X20, let's say, would be the biggest amount of energy release they would ever see from the sun? Because obviously you've got to have, you're going to set up your scale as, well, there's the biggest thing that could ever happen, but whoops, something bigger happened.
Well, they hadn't actually set an upper limit to the scale. What they had set is an upper limit to the detectors, and figuring that, well, we hadn't seen anything bigger than this, and so it was probably not, and that was not correct. the previous record was an X20 flare.
So what do you think they're recalibrating to right now?
Well, the instruments that are up there are the ones that are going to be up there for a while, so we won't have any other X-ray instruments that have got that are able to record higher power levels, and they'll just do it the way that they do it now.
Let me restructure my question. If we were to launch another satellite tomorrow, the instruments would be capable of recording how big a flare, do you suppose?
You might want to go up to X40, X50. Something like that.
X40 or X50.
Yeah, and let me tell you, Art, this is just totally a guess. The biggest thing that we've got on record for 40-some years is X28. So let's go ahead and make an X50. And who knows, that might not be enough either to capture some flares.
Uh-huh.
You never know.
Well, see, that's the whole thing about the sun and what's going on right now. It really does come down to that. We just don't know, do we?
There's a lot we don't know. That's right. There's a lot we do know, but there's still, why these big sunspots during solar minimum? We don't know. In 2 weeks when this thing is dead on the Earth's sun line again, is it going to be still another monster? Are we going to get even a bigger flare than the X28? We don't know. Just have to wait and see.
Is there any way to explain the dynamics that causes the sunspot or the hole itself?
Yeah, people have done a lot of work with trying to understand the nature of sunspots, and it has to do with the differential rotation of the sun. The sun does not rotate with the same same angular speed at all latitudes. So some latitudes run faster than others, and that twists up the solar magnetic field, and that twist represents stored energy. Any kind of twisted magnetic field, just like a twisted rubber band,
uh-huh,
represents stored energy. And so sometimes these twisted bundles of magnetic field become actually buoyant and float up through and pop through the surface of the sun, pushing a little bit of the solar gases out of the way at the surface, making that region a little bit cooler. And because it's cooler, it looks darker, and that's a sunspot.
All right. Professor, we've got to go. We're out of time. I could have used all night long. Thank you for being here, and thanks for the education.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, there you are, folks. Nobody really knows. But the sun, she's wiggling pretty hard right now. Fascinating. We'll just have to wait and see what comes around the horn. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell in the middle of the night. Stay right where you are. It's going to get very, very interesting.